I'm Ann Passis. I'm usually the producer of this program, but I am sitting in tonight because I get to chat with Buck about his recent adventure cycling the Andes Trail, 6,875 miles from the equator to the southern tip of South America. Thanks, yes. Buck, for letting me do this.
Well, you know, you are frequently behind that microphone.
Well, I
am,
but, you know, we don't usually switch halfway through the show.
That's true.
You know, you had a great idea when you and I talked about doing this, which was you said, oh, go back and listen to the conversation we had in July. Mm-hmm. So I did. And that was very interesting because you said in that at that time that you thought that anyone could do this if they really wanted to. So after everything you went through, do you still think that?
Well, I think to a certain degree, as long as you don't have a physical handicap of any sort, you know, and you're willing to put in the time, and yeah, you can. But it was challenging, very challenging.
It was more challenging than you thought it was going to be?
I don't really know. Yeah, I would say yes, because we spent so much time in high altitude, mm-hmm. And we did an awful lot of climbing, and you know, it's great beauty, and it opens vistas for you, and we had all day to do it, but it was very challenging for mm-hmm. everybody.
Mm-hmm. We should explain maybe for folks who aren't familiar just briefly what the expedition was and mm-hmm. how you decided to do it.
Well, we started in, I guess the expedition was organized by two people in the Netherlands, and they call their business Bike Dreams. And they've done this three times before this we did it. They do it every second year. And I had originally started talking to Brian Bennett about biking in South America, and we had decided that maybe we could do this ourselves, and it just didn't work out. There were too many logistical problems, and mm-hmm. then when Brian and Deb couldn't find a way to get around their motel, you know, they needed to run that, and it didn't sell, and it didn't work out to have somebody else run it. We peeked around for another way to do this, and that's when I came across the website mm-hmm. from Bike Dreams and thought, yeah, we can still do this. Because and as we checked it out, it kind of fit what we wanted to do, and we were looking for a challenge. Mm-hmm. We weren't looking for just sticking on paved roads and running down with a road bike. We wanted to get up in the Andes, and the whole trip runs through the Andes.
Right.
You see the mountains all the way down. With the only exception of, when do you miss them? There's times on the Pampas where they're quite a ways away.
Mm-hmm. Well, your pictures were stunning. So I have to ask, so it seemed like a long time to us that you were gone, you know, mm-hmm. almost 5 months. Mm-hmm. Did it feel long to you while you were there?
Well, it's like any vacation, I think, that you really get into. Every day lasts longer. It's almost like being a kid again, where you start playing in the morning and it seems like, man, this is great. And so I think, yes, you do. It does. You get into a routine otherwise in your life, and time does fly by faster because mm-hmm. there's not the expansion of new ideas and new things to take in.
So you mentioned that it was quite challenging and perhaps even more challenging, you know, than you had imagined. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the challenges that you faced?
Well, I guess the first thing was what I mentioned before. We started out in Ecuador. And there was some, because in Ecuador, they don't adhere to the steepest climb that we're going to have is 6% that we do here on any of our roads, you know. So we were pedaling on roadways that might have been 17%, 20%. That's steep climbs, mm-hmm. really steep climbs. Yeah, plus, they were very big mountains. You know, when you've got a mountain there of 6,800 meters, my math isn't here right away, but it's, you know, it's like close to 20,000. Those are big mountains. Once we started from Quito, it didn't take very many days before we were in those mountains. And we pretty much stayed in those mountains with a brief exception in Peru to go to the coast, all the way to the end of Bolivia. It was a long ways. That's half of our trip that mm-hmm. we were in mountains that high. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, it's hard to digest food, and it's hard to digest food. It's hard to sleep. Plus, when you're working at something, you don't have enough oxygen,
yeah.
which is the reason that you don't digest food as well or sleep as well. You have to work a lot harder to do it.
I'm sure.
So we all lost a lot of weight. And we were all working really hard through those that period of the trip.
And then when you get done for the day, then you don't sleep well either.
It's harder to sleep just because of the oxygen thing, and I think everybody felt it. It's to varying degrees from person to person.
Did some folks actually have altitude sickness?
Yeah, to a degree as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we did. It's helpful to start gradually working your way up, although Quito, Ecuador is already at 9,000 feet.
Oh.
So it wasn't like we were starting from sea level.
Right, you know? Not from Lake Superior.
No.
Okay.
So I guess that was one big challenge. And then the heat when we got out of the mountains and we dropped down into Salta in Argentina, it was hot. And we had days that were over 40 Celsius, which, you know, brings it to over 100 degrees.
Wow.
Where we're out there pedaling. And we also had some challenges in some of the roads that we were dealing with that were much rougher than any gravel roads we have here.
Mm-hmm.
They have loose sand, loose rocks, and we call them washboards here, and I think they were, corrugation is what they called
it. At least washboards.
Yeah,
there.
At least washboards.
Was it hard to stay hydrated while working so hard at that temperature?
Yeah, you did have to be careful to drink enough. Because it was so easy. At that time, I had a hydration pack on because I tended to drink more then. Although it's hard to carry on your back because it's so hot. You start to sweat so much with that additional thing on your back. But it worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know other people would bring three bottles. But we were met by one of Bright Green's trucks halfway through the day. So we could refill our bottles at that time.
Oh, okay. That must have been helpful.
It was extremely necessary.
Yeah.
And then as we moved down the continent and moved into to Patagonia, then the next challenge we had, once we got through the Lake District, which was my favorite area in the whole trip, of high winds. Patagonia means big wind.
Oh.
And that's exactly what we had down there. It's big winds. And to describe them to somebody, you know, it's hard to imagine how much force on certain days that we had where you get blown off your bike, you get blown into the ditch, you come around a corner and all of a sudden the wind is hitting you a different direction and boom, you're down. And when you try to get up and you grab your bike, the bike is still blowing down the road. And of course, so are you.
Oh my gosh.
It was amazing winds. It's not that steady all day, but you hit certain pockets of it where it's just, wow, how do you deal with this?
And it must have been hard to make headway on those days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
One day I
got blown into the ditch. So I got up on my bike and I let the wind blow me down the ditch, you know, there's some grass in there, but it got too rough. So then I pulled my bike back onto the road, and because I have bike cleats on my shoes, the wind pushed me down the road on those cleats. I wasn't even, and I'm holding onto the bike behind me, and it's pushing me down the road. It was amazing. It's like skating, except you don't know where you're going to go. You have no control.
Wow.
So, and of course, I'm not the only, every one of us had that problem.
Sure.
With those big winds. So there were those kinds of challenges all the way down.
Well, you know. Yeah. Well, speaking of that, during the trip, you had a little mishap and separated your shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that what was that like?
Well, we were just leaving Bolivia and we'd been at the Salar de Uyuni, which was one of the highlights of the trip, really, was the Big Salt Sea, which is not really a sea, but it's the largest salt flat in the world by a wide margin. And when you have no resistance, it's flat. I mean, it's perfectly flat. It's really fun to bike.
Mm-hmm.
But after we got done with that, we're heading out of Uyuni itself, the town. And a lot of those, we're on a dirt road. And a lot of those roads, the cars that have been driving them go off the road too. And they try to find a flatter place off of the road to drive because it's in the pampas. So it's flat. So that's exactly what we would do. We would go off of the main road if it looked like it was easier, and then we'd come back on it if it looked like it wasn't, like you were doing better on the road. So I was taking a little side trip off of the main road down into the ditch, which is about 6 feet below, and I failed to bring my my front tire up. I didn't lift up fast enough at the bottom, so the bike stopped, and I kept going.
Ow.
Over the top of the handlebars and landed. I rolled my shoulder so I wouldn't hit face first, you know, and that's where I hit was my shoulder. So I'd never had an injury like that before. It was a lot more painful than I thought, than I would have guessed. So that took a little while to get, you know, organized from there to get some help. And I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 hours later, when our doctor who was along on the trip, and she'd never done it before, is the one that pulled my arm back into position.
Wow.
And then the pain was instantly gone.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was.
But you still took it easy for a couple days?
Well, they gave me a sling, and they wanted me to stay for like 3 weeks, but that's really, you know, a very conservative approach, I think. So I stayed out for 6 days, and I probably could have hopped on sooner, because on the bike, all of your work is at a level to your shoulders and not above them with your hands. I got some advice from our former doctor here and good friend, John Wood. He says, yeah, go right ahead and bike as long as you don't fall off. So that was good enough for me.
Yeah, but that's not a given in those conditions that you wouldn't fall off again.
It gets old riding on the truck.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
I had to get out of that.
If you just joined us, we're speaking with Buck Benson here on the Roadhouse. Of course, he's normally the host of this program, but we've turned the tables on him, are hearing about his cycling adventure in the Andes in South America. So you talked about some of the physical challenges, the wind and altitude and so forth. What about mental challenges? What about group process? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest challenges for a lot of the people who were aboard, several of them anyway, was just the fact that you get up in the morning, 6 o'clock. We had a regular routine. You get ready for breakfast. You pack up. If you're tenting, you put your tent away. You know, if you're in a hotel, you get all your gear together. And it has to go back on the truck. So everybody's busy with that. We have breakfast at 7. And then we do all the chores. If we're camping, you have a lot of things to put, the tables, all the gear gets back on the truck before anybody goes biking. And if you're in a hotel, you just it's a little simpler. But the point being that whether it's raining, snowing, cold, windy, whatever, you're getting on your bike and you're going biking. And you've got a certain route to do, whether you feel like it or not. You know, this is what you signed up for. This is what you're doing. And I think it helped me a lot to have done things not as long as this, but similar in the past. So, you know, you know that you're going to be fine and that it's not as cold as you think. And when you get on the bike, you warm up. You know, all those things will work out. But, geez, for some of the Aussies, they're not used to being cold. It wasn't easy.
Hard for them.
Yeah, they didn't know exactly how to dress or not dress, and which is something you need to make up your mind about, because you can't carry all that much stuff on your bike. So you need to decide, okay, am I going to be warm enough? Am I going to be too warm? And those kind of things mentally, you know, that was, they had to learn to accept that. We get up, we're going biking.
You mentioned Aussies. How many Americans were there on this trip?
There were 4 of us.
Okay.
Americans.
And the rest were from?
Well, most of the rest were from either Australia or Holland. And there was 21 of us who did the whole trip. And I think the most we ever had, because some people would do just sections, was just under 40 at one time. And that doesn't mean that we're all cycling together. You know, you go out and you cycle at whatever speed you're going to, and you end up cycling with whoever you want to, basically, and you're spread out. So it all worked out that way. It was fine. As far as other mental challenges, of course, you're with these people 24/7, and most outdoor people that you get involved with are generally pretty easy to get along with, and that was the case here. Most everybody is knows the challenges. They've been there before. They've done it. They kind of know how to get along. But there's always a couple in the crowd, and we did have a couple. that made things a little interesting at times. So, so you deal with those things too.
If you had to pick one day that was the toughest and then one day that was the best, tell us what those two were.
Well, the toughest for me is easy because we had a day in a place called Tocota. And in Argentina or Chile or most of those places, towns have names. You have a little name on the map, and there might even only be one house there. It's pretty easy to get your own town. And in this case, so I'm saying Tocota as if it's a town, and it's on the map, but it's actually just a very small police station up in the mountains that's only there for these guys to patrol on horseback. It's close to the Chilean border. They patrol on horseback to prevent any Chilean people from shooting their guanacos, which is a wild version of the llamas.
Oh, all right.
So that's what they're patrolling by. So anyway, we were pedaling our bikes to get there, and it was the worst damn road I've ever seen in my life. And when we started out, we're on the Pampas. It was hot, really hot. And I would push my bike what felt like the first maybe 20K of this 78K was pretty good, but then it deteriorated. And it was extremely difficult for everybody. We got dehydrated. We struggled to get through the sand. It was loose sand to try to bike through. And if you can imagine that, it was pretty deep. And it's really hard to power through that stuff. So you do the best you could. You get off the bike, and then you'd push it until you got fed up with that. Then you'd get back on it and try it again. And I really got hot that day.
Yeah.
And I know a bunch of others did. So that was my worst day.
That sounds like a tough day. 78K, that's close to 50 miles, right?
Yeah, something like that. It's not that far if you're on a paved road.
Sure.
But it's quite a ways when you're on biking the kind of place we were. And I know all of us question, what are we doing here?
Well, that was going to be one of my next questions was, any low points where you thought, geez, what am I doing here?
Well, in that case, there was a way to go to reach the same eventual destination on pavement. But our Bike Dreams planners really love mountain biking. So they thought it was a good idea to go there.
More K and for your money.
There was some complaining.
I bet.
It also was a race, even though there was maybe only four or five people racing.
Yes, I'd like to hear more about that.
And James, my initial roommate, not that I knew him before, but he became my roommate, James Hodges, he was the leader, and he was there for the race, probably the only person who actually signed up because of the race. And he was intense, and he's done a lot of very difficult things. And that was what he was doing every day. And on that ride to Tocota, he got so dehydrated, he was never the same person racing after that.
Wow.
He just was never the same guy. He looked terrible. He just went downhill. So it kind of gives you an idea how difficult that day was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did anybody drop out after that day?
No, they didn't. A lot of people, though, got on the truck, and some people got picked up.
I bet you were not one of them.
I didn't at that time, no, because I wanted to complete the course, you know. Mm-hmm. But I probably should have got on the truck. From the heat standpoint, it's not good for me to be that hot.
Yeah.
And the high points, I had a lot of them. I guess I mentioned one already, which was the Salt Flats. Not only because it was fun to bike on there, but it was so easy that we had all day to do like 60K. So we were having a ball, you know, taking just fun photos, and you put one of them on our website.
Yes.
We were just having a lot of fun. And the other parts that I really enjoyed would have been the Lake District, which is down Bariloche and south in Argentina and Chile. And that's because it was so beautiful. And it was sort of like, I give a description, it was like taking an oversized Colorado and adding these big lakes.
Wow.
And a lot fewer people. So it was a place I'd like to go back.
Yeah. And I think, as far as the best days for you, I know you mentioned when we talked in July and then when you and I have talked off air about loving the leaving the day to day chores of everyday life behind. Can you talk a little bit about what that was like and how that felt?
That was part of my reason for doing this trip, was to take a longer period of time. I didn't watch the news. I didn't listen to the news. I didn't read newspapers. And that was a conscious thing. I also didn't I didn't want any news about my store. I didn't check my bank account. I didn't. I just wanted to be there every day, doing what I was doing, and having a focus only there, and having a simple life, and seeing where that took me. Mm-hmm. And it was a very calming, relaxing, focused way to live. Mm-hmm. And it made me think of how maybe our grandparents or great-grandparents had a lot less stimuli coming at them than we do every day. And I think it leads to a life I'd like to incorporate more into my day-to-day here.
Mm-hmm. And despite your disconnect from those things, you did manage to put out a really fabulous blog about your trip.
It's kind of you to say that.
It really was.
I like to recount what happened during periods of time, and while it's fresh in my memory, and while I could talk about it easily, and that was one way to do it, plus to get news out to everybody who was interested, and also so I can go back later on and remind myself of where I was and what I was doing and what I was thinking.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So was that challenging sometimes when you're tired at the end of the day to sit down and write?
Yeah, it was difficult, and as we got into the more challenging places, you know, I found that I didn't have the same amount of imagination. I was just too tired sometimes. I still wrote it, but I wasn't always very happy with the end, you know, the outcome of that.
Well,
writing.
We were. It was really fun to follow. If you're listening and you haven't checked it out, it's buckbenson.org. It's really, really well written, greatly detailed, and very fun to read. So.
There was something that I should mention about the countries I was in.
Yes.
Ecuador, Peru, Bolivia was the first half, and then Argentina and Chile was the second half of our... Argentina's a huge country when you're going north to south. In the three more northern countries, the culture was so much different than it was as I moved south. Hmm. It was mostly indigenous or mixed folks that lived there. Just the way they dressed announced that this is different, you know, and the small towns and the little bodegas where you'd go, which is just a little store to get what our needs, was often the only thing there. And they're living off the land primarily, and they're very, very friendly. Out of a little town in Ecuador, Riobamba, they gave us they filled a pickup with a brass band and they let us out of town.
Oh, that's wonderful.
We had mayors giving speeches, you know, and townspeople all around for us, you know, we're just biking. People would, everywhere you stop for directions, they would take the time. And if you didn't understand, because they're speaking in Spanish and we're not very adept at it, they would actually physically take us there. I mean, you don't find that in most places.
That's lovely.
Yeah, it was just a wonderful reception. You felt very welcome. You felt very safe. I get that question a lot. I felt safe almost everywhere. The only exception was when we first came into Peru, because it's a border area, that they gave us a police escort for about 100K or so. They were worried about us. But then we got to the coast and everything was happy and we never had an inkling that anything was wrong after that.
That's great.
So, I just should finish the Argentina-Chile part of it. That was more like moving into the culture like we have.
Oh.
And, you know, they're, you can buy whatever you want. You can. It shouldn't get the impression that these are third world countries by any means. They're industrialized in most ways and successful countries.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that since you've been back, you said you've been sorting through your pictures. How many did you take?
I don't know how many I took because I'd sit in my tent and I'd erase the ones that I didn't like.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't keep track of them. But I suppose I ended up with, 900 to 1,000 that I kept. And I narrowed it down to what I thought was a smaller number, 500. Then I showed some friends those, and I realized this is taking way too long. So now I got it down to about 300. And I don't know how much further I got it. It's hard to throw some of those photos out because they all tell a story to me.
Well, you don't have to throw them out.
Well, I mean, take them out of what you show people.
Oh, right.
You know, it's, and I think about, and when I was doing that, I was thinking, how did Lonnie do that?
Mm-hmm.
Lonnie Dupree, who would be gone sometimes, you know, 6 months to a year and have to narrow his down for the talks that he gave.
Don't know.
But he did it. So I guess you just throw them out and you keep the ones you think are okay.
Speaking of talks, you got any concrete plans right now to show some photos? And
I don't right now, but, you know, if people would like it to happen, I'd be very happy to do that.
Mm-hmm. And how has re-entry been for you?
Well, I haven't done much work yet.
No rush.
It's a quiet time of year at in most all businesses in Cook County, and I'm just kind of working back into my home and work back into my business and try to keep, as I mentioned, a lot of the small things that I learned for myself out there in front.
That's wonderful, Buck. Hmm. And have you been thinking about your next adventure?
Not yet, although I do have a few things in mind.
You do?
Yeah.
Nothing you want to share right now?
Well, they're not concrete at all. You know, you hit all these things start with just a glimmer, and sometimes they go somewhere, and sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, it started quite a while before it happened. So sometimes it takes a while. But I'm thinking about New Zealand, which isn't nearly as difficult a task as I just finished.
As far as bike, would you bike?
Yeah, I would bike there.
Okay.
And maybe Tasmania. But who knows?
Yeah.
You know, I could get sidetracked.
One more question before we let you go. I know you're looking at the clock. Don't worry.
I'm out of habit, you know, man.
I know.
I do this all the time when I'm on your end.
Relax. I'll watch the clock.
Okay.
How did this compare in difficulty, for example, with when you climbed Aconcagua or Denali?
Well, Denali was very, very difficult. And I have a great appreciation for what our fellow traveler, Lonnie Dupree, is doing, trying to attempt right now. Because even in summer, that's a really, really hard mountain. It's immense. And you have the snow and the cold and the winds and all these things that make it difficult. But it's a shorter trip than what I just did. And I think the length of what I did and the fact that you don't really ever get time to recover.
Mm-hmm.
As you get older, and I'm getting older, you do something like this, and younger people don't really need the recovery as badly as those of us who were a little older did. And so it was difficult that way.
Yeah,
was to not wear down.
Sure,
you know, and I did wear down for a while in Peru, and got really sick.
This is separately from your shoulder, right?
Yes. Yeah, I am. I mean, I had a fever, I had intestinal problems, I had various difficulties going on, and it came from just getting too thin, too worn out, too susceptible to anything that was right next to me.
Mm-hmm.
And several other of our biking folks had the same problems. So, yeah, that was difficult. I don't know, they're difficult all in their own way. Just like running a 50-mile race, trail race. It's really difficult for one day.
I wouldn't know. I'm sure it is.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to think of what's really hard in my life, and that's really hard.
Yeah.
But it's over, you know, and however fast you do it, 9 hours to 10 to 11 if you're really slow. Well, I shouldn't say it that way, if you're getting slower. And the ones that people that have the hardest time, of course, are taking 12 hours and more because that makes it harder. I guess I would put this...
Just the sheer length of it.
The sheer length and the difficulty of cycling every day. The terrain was really difficult. The length of what we biked every day was really difficult. You really needed to be ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
And most all the cyclers had done major cycling trips before.
Oh.
Me being one that hadn't.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. How did you feel like your training prepped you?
I think I did what I could here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was pretty happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't train for altitude here.
No.
You know, but we had bikers coming from Australia and Netherlands, too. They couldn't train for altitude there either, so you just go with it.
Well, we're really happy that you're back safe and sound and that you had a great time. Thanks for sharing your story.
Yeah, thanks for allowing me a little time here. And also thanks to everybody at my store who allowed this to happen. What a great crew there.
Thanks, Buck. Mm-hmm.